Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about the adrenal glands specifically and how to support the adrenal glands when you have chronic fatigue. I have actually talked about the adrenal glands in several episodes previously, and these were episodes 18 and 19, so a very, very long time ago now. But it did occur to me that I haven't actually done an episode just on how to support your adrenal glands. And recently in practice, I have been working with quite a few clients across the past few months who've all done adrenal testing. It's not always the testing that we prioritize, just because sometimes we're doing stool tests or testing for mold or other much more advanced testing, and that sort of takes priority in the client's budget, and we don't do a lot of adrenal testing, or at least historically haven't done a lot of adrenal testing. But just recently I've had a flurry of clients come through who have done adrenal testing for various reasons. They've been interested in hormones, and then they've done it as part of the Dutch hormone test. And that was kind of just inspiration to talk about adrenal glands specifically and how we can support them. So that's what I will be covering in today's episode. But as always, if you haven't already left a review for the podcast, that would mean so much to me. When you leave a review, it just improves the podcast rankings, and then it helps other people find the episodes, find this work, and hopefully get a little bit more support that they need. And then if you are feeling extra energized to do some good today, if you do find anything that you learn in today's episodes or any of the episodes really supportive, to share it with the community that you're part of that could benefit from this work, and I would be very grateful. But let's go into today's episode and talk about how to support your adrenal glands when you have chronic fatigue. So there are some schools of thought that suggest poorly functioning adrenal glands could be an underlying cause of chronic fatigue. And I would say that although imbalanced adrenal function could be part of the complex web of fatigue, it's more likely a piece of the puzzle than the whole puzzle itself, as is the complexity of energy limiting illnesses. That being said, when it comes to recovering your energy and your vitality and your aliveness, there is seldom one magic bullet solution. Instead, improvements happen in our health and in our energy when we support the body as a whole. And part of that support may include supporting the adrenal glands. I know I supported my adrenal glands on and off throughout my journey, and that's why I wanted to talk about it in this episode specifically today. But before we go into how to support the adrenal glands, let's back right up completely and talk about what are the adrenal glands. So the adrenal glands are two small glands situated above the kidneys, and they are responsible for releasing our stress hormones, cortisol being the one that most people are familiar with, also DHEA, which is a precursor to our sex hormones, primarily androgens, and then epinephrine, which is adrenaline, and then norepinephrine, which is noradrenaline. And these adrenal glands and the adrenal glands are made up of the adrenal medulla and then the adrenal cortex. So the adrenal medulla specifically releases epinephrine and norepinephrine, and then the adrenal cortex releases cortisol, DHEA, and aldosterone. These hormones are very important in terms of regulating metabolism. I always say when I'm discussing this with clients, I say like cortisol is your energy liberating hormone. It takes stored fuel out of circulation and puts it into your bloodstream so that you can make energy. So it is really important from an energy perspective. But it's also important for our immune system, for how we manage inflammation. There is a connection between our mast cells, our adrenal output, and our circadian rhythm. It's really important for maintaining blood pressure, which we need healthy blood pressure so we get oxygen and nutrients to the brain so that our brain can work well. And it's also really important for supporting our circadian rhythm and just helping the body respond to stress, because it's not that we shouldn't have stress in our lives, but we should respond to stress appropriately, and healthy adrenal glands help us do that. Additionally, the adrenal cortex releases aldosterone, which is a hormone that regulates blood pressure by acting on the kidneys to retain sodium and to excrete potassium. And this happens via a negative feedback loop. So when the kidneys detect that sodium is low, if you don't have enough salt in your diet, and then potassium is high, or if blood pressure is low, then the kidneys talk to the adrenal glands and they tell the adrenal glands we need more aldosterone to regulate this. So there's also electrolyte imbalances would also potentially create strain on the adrenal glands because the adrenal glands have to produce aldosterone in response to electrolyte imbalances. So imbalances in adrenal function can have an impact on how the body responds to stress, how the body is able to regulate its electrolytes, and that impacts blood pressure, how the body is able to metabolize energy for fuel, how we manage our immune system, and dysfunction in any or all of these could be contributing factors in the web of chronic fatigue. So not necessarily the sole cause, but a factor in your web, which you as an individual may need to support. So let's talk about healthy adrenal function. Healthy adrenal glands release adrenal hormones according to our circadian rhythm, which is a specific type of biorhythm of physical, mental, and behavioral changes that follow a 24-hour cycle. So for the adrenal glands specifically, what this means is that the adrenal hormone cortisol should peak 30 minutes after we wake up in the morning, and then gradually decrease across the day, reaching its lowest point around 2 a.m., after which it will gradually begin to increase again. And DHEA, the other adrenal hormone, follows the same pattern. This peak in adrenal hormones shortly after waking is known as the cortisol awakening response. And there should be a 50% increase in your cortisol levels at that time. And that is considered to be a healthy marker of adrenal function. The way that I describe this to clients is like, this is your punch, like your get up and go to start the day when your adrenals can really like punch and like give you that boost of energy to get going for the day. That's a sign of good health. And that is our cortisol awakening response. Then we have epinephrine and norepinephrine, which are also our adrenal hormones, but they follow a slightly different pattern of release. They will rise similar to cortisol and DHEA in the morning, like the car, but during the day, they might be a little bit more moderate, and then they're much more responsive to acute stresses, like you drink a cup of coffee or your blood sugar gets low, or you get into an argument with your spouse, and then these adrenaline and noradrenaline will increase. So that's kind of what we would call healthy adrenal outputs. And here I would say as well, is if you are going through something really stressful, it's normal to have an increase in these hormones, but it's not normal to have an increase in these hormones when nothing stressful is happening. And it's also not normal to have very low levels of these hormones when something very stressful is happening, because that is then a sign of dysfunction. So it's not that high cortisol is bad. High cortisol might be good in the context of something that you're experiencing, but chronically high cortisol can become problematic over time and can also lead to loss of adrenal resiliency over time, which causes low output and dysfunction. So when we're looking for signs of adrenal dysfunction, there's different stages, and you might hear different practitioners talk about all the different stages, but for simplicity, I've just categorized them into hyper and hypo, high adrenal output or low adrenal output. And so hyperfunction, your body is producing a lot of these hormones like cortisol, epinephrine, and norepinephrine, could show up physically like difficulty falling asleep, feeling wired, feeling anxious, having high blood pressure, having high blood sugar, weight gain, especially around the middle, increased thirst and urination, and increased heart rate. then low output or adrenal hypofunction is when we have low levels of these hormones, and that could be difficulty staying asleep because your blood sugar is going low at night, cravings for salt because we know the adrenal glands regulate sodium, being a slow starter in the morning. So I talked about that punch, that get up and go to start the day. You don't have a punch. You don't have that get up and go to start the day. Afternoon fatigue, low blood pressure, dizziness when moving from sitting to standing, afternoon headaches, headaches on exertion or with stress, and hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar. So just to name here that you may resonate with signs of both hypo and hyperfunction. And this could be due to a combination of having low cortisol levels and then higher levels of epinephrine and norepinephrine. So basically your adrenal glands are not producing enough cortisol, but your adrenaline and noradrenaline are taking over to compensate, which can give that tired but wired feeling as well. And those hormones are more closely governed by the autonomic nervous system. So it's almost like your nervous system is working a lot harder to compensate for where the adrenal glands are lacking. And this is where testing can be really helpful to see, do I feel this way because my cortisol is high, or do I feel this way because my cortisol is low? And then that's probably means that my adrenaline and noradrenaline are overcompensating. So on that note, let's talk about testing. Cortisol can be tested in blood, urine, or saliva, and the most reliable test is saliva. There are various companies here in the UK and obviously all over the world that do cortisol saliva testing. In the UK, I will use the Genova Diagnostics test and make sure we add on the cortisol awakening response. Or I might do something like a Dutch complete hormones with the cortisol awakening response added on as well, if we're looking to test sex hormones at the same time. It's really important to understand that when you're testing adrenal function, you're just testing a snapshot of a specific moment in time. So variables such as caffeine, exercise, blood sugar imbalances, supplements, emotional stresses, illness, or maybe even where you are in your menstrual cycle may influence the test results. So I often ask a client to keep a diary of influencing variables of their day. So what happened that day? Did you, not necessarily people with fatigue, but if somebody did a lot of exercise or went for a long walk, or they ate something that would destabilize their blood sugar, or something really stressful happened, we want to take that into consideration when we interpret the results. So the results are interpreted in context of the individual's experience. One of the markers I'm most interested in is the cortisol awakening response. And I always like to make sure that this is included in the test, because some tests might not include it. You need to check. And the cortisol awakening response, just as a reminder, is the peak in cortisol that should happen within 30 minutes of waking. Therefore, how it's usually taken is you have a saliva sample, which you take as soon as you wake up in the morning. You take a sample 30 minutes later, then you take a sample 60 minutes later, and then you'll take samples at intervals across the day. And that increase from the waking sample to the 30-minute sample should be an increase of 50%. So a low cortisol awakening response, for me, how I interpret it, is it's much more concerning than an elevated cortisol awakening response, because of the way that this influences our neurochemistry, our immune system, our metabolism, and different hormone signaling. Someone with a low cortisol awakening response is likely someone who really struggles with their morning energy. They may have problems with blood sugar control. They may be prone to low blood sugar. And this individual may need to support their adrenal glands to recover some of their adrenal resiliency. You know, if somebody is coming up with a low morning cortisol awakening response, it's really showing they don't have that oomph. They don't have that get up and go. And we really want to restore that, because it's so important in terms of the way that it influences our biorhythm. If someone has a higher than normal cortisol awakening response, or generally a higher adrenal output, the most important thing is that I can at least see, well, these adrenal glands can respond to stress. Yes, perhaps maybe they're over-responding, or maybe there's just a lot of triggers that we need to address in this person's lifestyle, but they can do it. they can respond, whereas someone with low adrenal output is struggling to respond, and that's usually more concerning to me. So it's also noteworthy that people with high adrenal output and people with low adrenal output can both have fatigue. I see clients with fatigue who have very, very high adrenal output, and I see clients with fatigue who've got very low adrenal output. And this is where testing can be helpful, because if we know what the adrenal glands are doing, then we can create a tailored support plan, which is specific to the individual, which is what I'm going to talk about now, which is how we actually support the individual if they've got low or if they've got high adrenal output. So let's start with low adrenal output. And this is actually true for both low and high, but blood sugar management is one of the most powerful tools we have to support adrenal output. When blood sugar drops too low, the adrenal glands have to come to the rescue, and they have to produce epinephrine and cortisol. And remember, I've said that these hormones are energy liberating. So they help to liberate stored glucose, which is usually stored in the liver or the muscle tissue, so that we can bring up blood sugar again if it's gone too low. But as glucose is released into the bloodstream, we also need to get it into the cells. This means that your pancreas, which produces insulin, is also working hard. And at the same time, the pancreas is not only producing insulin, but it's also producing glucagon, because it's stimulating glucose production in the liver. So it's like a low blood sugar event is really stressful for the body. It's like all hands on deck. We need the adrenal glands working. We need the pancreas working. We really need to get blood sugar back up again. When a healthy person's blood sugar drops low, they don't even know that this is happening. And a healthy person and the pancreas and the adrenal glands, they kick in and they help to support the regulation of blood sugar without the person even going into a noticeable blood sugar low. But when somebody has adrenal glands that are under functioning or have lost resiliency, that this might be ineffective or delayed. And that's why the hypoglycemic event is happening in the first place. So if you are somebody who loses function before meals, if you get tired before meals, if you get dizzy before meals, if you get hangry before meals, and then you eat, and then that is restored, that can often be a sign that you have slightly sluggish adrenal glands that may need supporting. And the way that we support the adrenal glands is by taking pressure off of them, by really, really stabilizing our blood sugar. And I do have clients who have a lot of blood sugar regulation issues, who are very prone to low blood sugar events. And I have to say, you have to be disciplined. This has to be consistent. You can't dip in or dip out of blood sugar control, sometimes eat really well and sometimes eat not. People with hypoglycemia issues need to eat really well all the time. And it's beyond the scope of this podcast to talk about what we do specifically for hypoglycemia, but there's a whole podcast on that, which is episode 66. So if you recognize some of these symptoms that I've been talking about feeling tired, dizzy, hangry, losing cognitive function before meals, and then it's restored with eating, you want to listen to episode 66, or even consider doing the blood sugar mini course. At the time I'm recording this, just to let you know, we're actually making some changes to the membership site that I offer to include all the mini courses and the Nurturing Resilience subscription. I don't have the details on it right now because it's currently we're workshopping everything, but I know by the time this episode eventually gets published, there will probably be a whole new amazing offer to give you lots more support in your journey. And that's worth checking out if you want to head on over to my website and have a look. So that is blood sugar. The next thing we can do, which a lot of people find really helpful, clients especially, is electrolytes. Remember that I said aldosterone is one of the adrenal hormones, which is responsible for regulating blood pressure and electrolytes. Low blood pressure can be a sign of adrenal dysfunction, especially low adrenal output, and this can also link back to having too little sodium and not enough potassium. So what I would recommend in this case is a high sodium electrolyte supplement, which you can take in the morning when the adrenal glands are working their hardest, but sometimes even two or three times throughout the day can be really beneficial if you are struggling with your adrenal glands. My favorite high sodium electrolyte is Repower, spelled R-E-P-O-W-R. And you can get a 10% discount off their little packets with the code ANIMASH, which is just my name, all one word, all big caps. They're really great. They have like individual serving sizes. So you just open a packet, put it in 500 mils of water, drink it as slowly or quickly as you like, and then you are getting 1,000 milligrams of sodium. I usually do have one of those every single day, usually in the morning, usually with exercise, but sometimes also if I just feel that I need it, I will have a second one. Additionally, you can also consume high salty foods. So very often people with fatigue, they eat very well, they have a very clean diet, which means they have a low sodium diet because they're not having a lot of processed foods. So we need to add extra salt to our food. And you can also increase the saltiness of your diet if you have things like pickles, olives, biltong, sometimes bone broth, and add extra salt, or even having a stock cube and drinking it just like a cup of soup. Obviously, some of these foods won't be appropriate for everyone, you know, pickles, olives, things like that, biltong, not so great if you need to eat low histamine. But if you're not on a low histamine diet or a low oxalate diet, then some of these could be appropriate for you. The biltong might be okay for low oxalate. So then moving on to supplements and herbs. So Glycyrrhiza glabra is the active component in licorice root that may slow down the breakdown of cortisol. And it does this by inhibiting an enzyme called 11-beta-hydroxysteroid dehydrogenase. You don't need to remember that. All you need to know is that licorice root, or this active component of licorice root, helps to delay the breakdown of cortisol, which means your adrenal glands have worked hard to make this cortisol. And if we can keep it in the system for a little bit longer and not break it down, that means the adrenal glands don't have to work so hard. This is different to DGL, which a lot of people take for their digestion. So it is licorice root. The Glycyrrhiza glabra is the active component that you want to take. And it can be taken in supplement form. I usually recommend people take it when they wake up in the morning and then around midday again, depending on their biorhythm. The thing to know about it is it might increase blood pressure, which is great if your blood pressure is low. It might be okay if your blood pressure is normal, but it would be something that you want to consider just monitoring and tracking and staying on top of, and perhaps discuss with your healthcare practitioner. The product that I like the best is there's a product called Adrenal AM, like the morning, which is by the Poliquin Group. There's only one place I have found that sells this in the UK, which is a website called True Performance Supplements. So if you Google True Performance Supplements, you should find that Adrenal AM on their website. The other thing worth mentioning about this is even when I have clients with an optimal car, but low adrenal output the rest of the day, I would still give them licorice root so that whatever when they're punching in the morning, we can delay that breakdown so they've got more leading them into the rest of the day. So it's not only for people with low carb. Then we've also got just general adrenal adaptogens. So these are herbs that have a beneficial impact on adrenal function. And usually these herbs work synergistically. So that means that they're better taken together than taken as a single herb. Often, like, I'll be working with a new client and they're taking ashwagandha, but just on its own, or holy basil, just on its own. And ideally, we want to take a combination product, which has got holy basil, rhodiola, rosea, withania, somnifera, Siberian ginseng, and ashwagandha all in one. And the product that I really like here is called Adaptocrine, which is, the brand is Apex Energetics. I just literally paused this recording to look this up. Then finally, it's also worth talking about calming adaptogens, because sometimes we see with people with low cortisol, they might have low cortisol across the day. And then at nighttime, all of a sudden cortisol starts to go up. They have an inverted biorhythm, which is something we definitely do not want. So here we want to obviously have the foundations of blood sugar management, but then we might also want to consider some lifestyle and supplement modifications. So from a lifestyle perspective, really supporting the nervous system at night, doing things like restorative yoga, yoga nidra, low level lighting, candles, relaxing music, all of that good stuff. But then maybe also adding in something like L-theanine, lemon balm, valerian, phosphatidyl serine or passion flower in the late latter part of the day to help bring the cortisol levels down. That being said, we still need to get cortisol up in the morning, and we need to think about things we can do to improve CAR specifically. And the three strategies I use most often with clients are going to be sunlight, bright light exposure first thing in the morning, exercise if it's tolerated, cold exposure, like a cold shower, for example, if it's tolerated, and maybe even a combination of all three, if it's tolerated. The challenge is that somebody with a low CAR is maybe going to feel tired and motivated and refreshed in the morning. So it's really hard to get them to do anything. But we need to have, like, there needs to be a little bit of push here, provided that that push doesn't lead to a crash. So talking about sunlight or bright light, irrespective of your cortisol awakening response, this is something we should all be doing first thing in the morning. It should be part of your morning routine. There is a link between mast cell dysfunction and sleep and circadian rhythms. A disturbed circadian rhythm can impact mast cells, and once mast cells are activated, this can impact sleep. So we get stuck in this vicious cycle. Therefore, if you're someone with low CAR, if you struggle with sleep problems, if you have mast cell activation, we really want morning light to be part of your routine. And this means viewing light within that 30 minutes of waking, not through a window, not through sunglasses. It should be sunlight on the naked eye, 3 minutes on a sunny day, 10 minutes on a partly cloudy day, and then 20 to 30 minutes on a cloudy or rainy day. Unfortunately, we have to stay outside longer when the weather's bad, which is all the time in England, pretty much. If you wake up before sunrise, as I often do, you might just want to like put on all the lights in your home, or maybe use a 10,000 lux light, and then get outside, get your morning light when the sun does eventually come up. If you are somebody who's kind of more bedbound, housebound, is actually you physically cannot get outside to view the light, use the light box. And then as your capacity grows, one of your goals can be to actually get the natural light on your eyes. And then just generally, if it's within your capacity, spending as much time in daylight outside as possible. It's not always easy when you don't feel well, but that could be really supportive for your adrenal glands, your circadian rhythms, your mast cells, and just your overall health. Then the next thing we want to think about is exercise. So not everyone with fatigue can exercise. There are some people where they are just so far away from exercising, this probably sounds like a joke. So if that's not an option or it's not accessible for you right now, just ignore this part. But if you are able to tolerate and you are able to complete some form of exercise, even in an ideal world, this would be high intensity exercise for people who can actually tolerate it. Doing that for 10 minutes when you wake up in the morning can be another really great tool to improve your cortisol awakening response. However, for the majority of my clients, I would say it's just not accessible. In some cases as well, it's just also worth talking about exercise in general. When adrenal function is low, this can also be a contributing factor to poor exercise tolerance, especially high intensity exercise. So when people go from, they maybe can do some weightlifting at a low heart rate, but they want to start running or doing some cardio, which really gets their heart rate up, and they find that that always makes them crash, that can potentially be an adrenal issue. And so that might be worth noting if you're struggling to build your exercise capacity, is to think about your adrenal glands and how you're supporting them. One of the reasons why I always take electrolytes with exercise. But it also, it's really important not to push. So if you can't tolerate high intensity exercise, you might just need to avoid it until you've built up more resilience in your system. Then finally, we have cold water. So cold water exposure offers a wide range of benefits, which are great for health. It's a hormetic stressor, which means that it creates, at the right dosage, it creates a positive adaptation in the body and can improve stress resilience and can improve the management of inflammation. It can raise adrenaline and noradrenaline, which may help with energy and focus. It can improve our resilience and our grit because we're encouraging ourselves to do something uncomfortable. It may cause an increase in dopamine, up to 250 times greater than baseline, so it can improve energy, attention, focus, mood, and our drive. And in the short term, it can increase metabolism as we burn more calories to keep ourselves warm. However, cold exposure is not for everyone. And it would definitely not be the first intervention that I would recommend just because of that increased adrenaline, noradrenaline response. But just like exercise, it can also strain the system, especially if the system is already under considerable strain. So cold exposure is something that I would use towards the end of someone's recovery journey when they do have more resilience in their system and they are looking to grow capacity and build. That being said, some people find it really supportive. And if you can tolerate a little 90-second cold shower at the end of your hot shower and you feel good for it, it doesn't make you feel worse, then it might be something worthwhile considering. So those are all the ways that you can support low adrenal output. If you were to take anything away from this, it would be like the most simple things and accessible things would just be to manage your blood sugar and to get some electrolytes and some morning light. Those three things could really make a big difference. Then some of the interventions for high adrenal output do also overlap. So blood sugar management is important whether your adrenal function is high or low, because blood sugar highs and lows are going to put additional strain on your adrenal glands throughout the days. And what we're really trying to do is if somebody has got a high adrenal output, is just reduce triggers wherever possible. And blood sugar mismanagement could be a potential trigger. And you can learn a little bit more about this in episode 10 of the podcast, and also look out for changes to the membership site and how you can now access the blood sugar mini course if you want more help with this. Another thing just worth mentioning is when we're going through a big stress and our adrenal output is high, our metabolism is going to be working very hard, which means we might be burning through our food and our meals very quickly. And this might mean that you need to eat more frequently. You need to ensure your meals are high in protein and high in fat to exacerbate any blood sugar crashes. And then I think it's safe to say that, you know, nervous system support is universal to fatigue recovery. It's not just for adrenal issues. So I could potentially have also put this in the low adrenal output section. But high adrenal output is really going to, we're really going to need support for our nervous system, because this could be due to real stress that we have to deal with, or even just the perception of stress that we also have to deal with. And oftentimes we might not even feel that stressed because we've just become accustomed to a high level of baseline stress that's normal for us. But in fact, actually, it's just too high. And we live in a very stressful world with a degree of stimulation that we've not yet really evolved to cope with. You know, our ancestors didn't have mobile phones and the whole world available to them via the internet. So all humans could benefit from a toolbox which allows them to support their nervous system better. And this is what I teach in the Nurturing Resilience course. But if you're new to the nervous system and you're new to how to support your nervous system, I also have a free workshop, which you can find on my website, which is the Getting to Know Your Nervous System workshop. Then you can also use adrenal adaptogens for high adrenal output. but you might want to include some of the more calming herbs and nutrients as well, like L-theanine, lemon balm, passion flower, valerian, and magnesium glycinate, especially at night. If there's difficulty getting to sleep, these can be really helpful when placed in the evening. And then there might be vitamins and minerals that your body also uses much more of during times of stress. So vitamin C, B vitamins, especially vitamin B5 and magnesium, are all really important for our adrenal health. And I do really like my top choices would probably be a really good B complex and then a really good magnesium glycinate for its calming benefits. Electrolytes. We talked about electrolytes when we talked about low adrenal output, but they can also be important if somebody has high adrenal output. But I might choose an option which is a little bit more favoring potassium versus sodium. So we're looking at more sodium when adrenal output is high. And especially if there's things like high blood pressure or water retention, then a higher potassium electrolyte supplement could be more supportive in this case. And then finally, exercise. In some ways, exercise can be supportive because it can burn off excess adrenaline. However, here I would like to reframe and say maybe we need to think less about exercise and more about movement. I know from somatic experiencing, when we're working with survival energy, so when we're working with fight and flight responses, the biggest takeaway I got from that work is you don't have to run 5 kilometers, 10 kilometers, or kill yourself in the gym to get rid of that survival energy. Being able to complete defensive movements that were not able to be completed at the time can have the same impact if done properly that running 5 kilometers can do. And this is something that people who have been kind of more addicted to exercise, like myself, often really struggle with. And when I had fatigue for such a long time, exercise was an outlet for my stress because I didn't have other ways to cope. And what somatic experiencing gave me was other ways that I could cope and get rid of some of that survival energy. But we do also want movement. But here we might just want to encourage movement which lowers the stress load and doesn't add to it. And that could be gentle forms of movement like yoga, qigong, walking, swimming, being outside. All of these things could be supportive for somebody with high adrenal output. So to summarize, adrenal output is definitely worth considering when you're supporting yourself through a chronic fatigue experience. But we need to tailor interventions to the individual to prevent harm and also to get the best possible outcome. Testing can be really informative when it comes to making decisions about what to do, what not to do. But even basic things like blood sugar management, electrolytes, nervous system support, using general adaptogens, that's like the rhodiolas, the ashwagandhas, the holy basil, the withiania, they can all be really supportive for high or low, as can nutrients such as vitamin B and magnesium as well. So if you're listening to this podcast today and you suspect that your adrenal glands need some support, hopefully that's given you some accessible things that you can do. And obviously, if you want to go a little bit deeper, if you want to do more testing, then you can take those extra steps. But hopefully there's a lot there for you to get yourself stuck into. So I hope you have enjoyed learning about the adrenal glands today, and I will see you in the next episode.